All right, welcome to Useful Idiots. I'm Matt Taibbi.
And I am Katie Halper.
We're going to do things faster this week. Let's try to make it faster.
All right, let's do it.
Like, I think the pace has been a problem, he says. Okay. Already delaying.
I know, pace. Yeah, seriously. Yeah. I like to talk about how Catholic Matt is. Then he has to say he's not active. I say, no, I mean culturally.
Guilt. And then it's a whole thing. Yeah. We can just speed right to the end where we decide. Where we
Thanks
run
so
out
much
of...
for watching.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Go to usefulidiots.substack.com.
Right. Don't watch whatever that podcast is. We always make fun of Pots of America.
We can play this whole thing on 2x speed.
Right. Yeah. Lots to talk about this week. A big story that we're actually not talking about, and I don't think in any of our segments, is this, the whole sudden reappearance of the lab leak hypothesis, which has basically everybody in America pissed off in one direction or another.
Yeah. Not to toot my own show, but on the Katie Halper show this week, I spoke to Thomas Frank.
Right. And he
about
did a
the piece he did for The Guardian. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. About how it's going to be a moral earthquake, if it turns out to be true.
Yeah. It's and little fourth wall destruction here. Thomas Frank really wanted to hang out with you, Matt, and me.
Uh-huh. I know.
And it was only me. Matt. Yeah. But it was good.
I'm a hermit. What can I say?
Hermit. You're advertising for morally sanctioned. If something happens to you.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah. We've
But you have family alive,
joke.
So you can't.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We can't go there. Yeah. We'll have to at some point get into the lab leak thing, because it's hilarious on a bunch of levels, because people don't know how to define it. Like, there are some people who see the reappearance of this hypothesis as part of a deep state plot against China. And then there's other people who see it exactly the opposite way, essentially saying that the original pronouncement that the lab leak hypothesis was conspiracy theory was the deep state hypothesis.
Right.
So there's this epistemological, or epistemic, or whatever the word is, argument about sort of the origin of this new thing. And everybody's bugging out about it. And they feel way more strongly about it than probably they need to. But
I mean, it has become, you and I have slightly different views on China, but I'm working on my dual citizenship right now as we speak, actually. But a lot of people who I'm friends with and agree with politically are just understandably, I think, kind of knee-jerkily saying this is not true and this is new Cold War on China. But, the nice thing about this is, if it is true, right? And just to summarize, it's basically like Thomas Frank is saying it could have been gain of function?
Gain of function research, right? Which wouldn't implicate China alone, by the way. It would also implicate us.
Because we funded that. And
part of it,
Part of it. And also, it would be ironic because Obama's administration stopped doing that, right? And then Trump started again. So it would be really ironic if Trump helped this thing happen.
Right.
China. But a lot of people pointed out to me that I was like, well, of course, people are afraid that it's going to stir this hostility towards China or justify hostility towards China. And also it's racist. They're afraid of that stuff. And they're like, racist as opposed to the idea that it started because they're eat dirty food.
I know. Yeah, exactly.
Which I was like, oh, OK, then sure. Yeah. So we're competing between two potentially racist narratives, which I think should free people up. And also, I just want people to know it's not people can oppose gain of function, right? Which is when you basically you create a stronger version of something, but it's in the name of science. It's to create immunity around it. If a country, if China did do this, it wasn't to be we are going to let this out and poison the world, or this is part of an attack on the West.
Right. The scientific critique of this is that basically it's a bunch of people who were being irresponsible in their pursuit of this kind of research. They were running around collecting a whole bunch of, it was it's sort of like Jurassic Virus Park.
Yeah.
They were getting together a bunch of dangerous stuff. Yeah, exactly. And putting it in labs and sort of enhancing it in order to test which one is more likely to become a pandemic. And oops, these humanized mice or whatever, something happened, right?
Yeah.
Whatever the theory is, but in typical American fashion, there's nobody who's even mildly neutral about the whole thing.
Yeah.
They're in complete freak out mode, and we'll have to get to it at some point.
Yeah.
So four food groups, I think you're first this week, right?
Yeah,
Democrats suck. Is there anything?
No, I was, you know, I pulled an all-nighter trying to find something. Yeah. I settled on this one. Let's see. So we got, you know, this is kind of, it was just a question of time before this came up again. We got Rahm Emanuel. He is being reportedly offered Japan ambassadorship. People may know that Rahm Emanuel is a little problematic.
He's a dick.
He's a dick. He was, of course, Obama's chief of staff. He helped cover up as mayor of Chicago the killing of the police killing of Laquan McDonald, who was 17 years old. And he also, you know, put like a dead fish on a political enemy's doorstep.
Did he really do that? I never heard that story.
Yeah, I've told you this before.
Oh, right. Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah.
It's okay. Senioritis, senior right, moment.
Yes. Yeah.
Repeated senior moment syndrome.
And or ex-drug addict moment, one or the other.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. There's also that.
Yeah. So there's and he also, of course, you know, Obama basically blamed him for being a dick. He got like dick by, dick contagion from Rahm Emanuel because he basically blamed
dick by association.
Dick by association. Well, it's worse than dick by association. It's dick by osmosis almost.
Right.
Because
Dickmosis.
Dickmosis. Yeah. Because he blamed Rahm Emanuel for killing a bunch. He's like, I don't really want to kill that many people with drones and stuff, but like, Rahm Emanuel was basically like, you're really liberal, so you got to do it.
He was nagging.
He was nagging. He was nudging him.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
That was, we still haven't done a reading of Obama's book. We really have to do that. We should make some Substack only.
Yeah. We should get to that at some point. Oh, that's an interesting book because it's so different in tone from his other books. But anyway, go ahead. Yeah.
He's, let me just give you this one quote.
Maybe the idea is just to send him to Japan and hope he never comes back.
Maybe. That could be, yeah. Yeah.
Right? Because that is something that politicians do. Like, when they're being a little bit funny, you know, they get together and they say, let's give him the ambassadorship to Reunion Island or something like that, right? Let's see if he takes it, you know? Do you ever see that story? That actually, one of those scenes is in Chris Christie's book.
No, what was it?
It was it's right after Trump wins the election, and Christie's expecting some huge appointment because he was the first, you know, legit politician to support Trump. And Trump keeps stringing him along, and they keep sort of dangling these big posts in front of him, like, oh yeah, we're thinking about this and that, and maybe state or, you know, chief of staff, whatever it is. And he finally gets a meeting. And they're like, so what do you think about the ambassador to Vatican City?
He'd probably like it, though.
And he said no, ultimately.
Oh, I wonder why. Bad Catholic.
But can't you imagine, like, Bannon and Trump getting together? Like, where should we send this guy?
Yeah, you want to send this guy? Yeah. Outer space. No, we don't have an embassy there, sadly.
Not yet.
Yeah. Chris Christie. Yeah. Listen, Gail. Remember that moment? Listen, Gail. I have the right to send my kids wherever I want.
I don't remember that.
He yells at a woman for asking him why he sends his kid to private school, basically. Gail.
You don't send your children to public schools, you send them to private schools. So I was wondering why you think it's fair to be cutting school funding to public schools.
What's her name? What's her name, guys? Real quick, because the governor's talking. What is it? Gail, talk to Gail.
Hey, Gail, you know what? First off, it's none of your business. I don't ask you where you send your kids to school. Don't bother me about where I send mine.
So I just wanted to make sure that people, in case they don't know what I'm talking about, this is an excerpt of Obama's book. And he says that he took no joy in ordering drone strikes, but that according to Rahm Emanuel, you know, at his nudging, he couldn't, quote, look soft on terrorism, end quote. And this is from the humbly entitled memoir, A Promised Land.
Mm-hmm.
And he also says that Rahm Emanuel is obsessed with keeping track of a list of terrorist targets. Because Emanuel had, quote, spent enough time in Washington to know this new liberal president couldn't afford to look soft on terrorism. In places like Yemen, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq, the lives of millions of young men had been warped and stunted by desperation, ignorance, dreams of religious glory, the violence of the surroundings, or the schemes of older men. They were dangerous, these young men, often deliberately and casually cruel. Still, in the aggregate, at least, I wanted somehow to save them, send them to school, give them a trade, drain them of the hate that had been filling their heads. And yet the world they were part of and the machinery I command more often had me killing them instead.
That's right.
I took no joy in any of this. It didn't make me feel powerful. I'd entered politics to help kids get a better education, to help families get health care, to help poor countries grow more food. It was that kind of power that I measured myself again. But the work was necessary, and it was my responsibility to make sure our operations were as effective as possible.
It wasn't like I was having fun doing this.
Yeah, I didn't get off
necessary.
On it.
Yeah, it wasn't like I did it late at night.
Right.
You know, in my underwear.
Right.
In front of a computer.
Yeah.
Right. No.
Yeah, it wasn't like that. No one walked in on me doing that. Right. I didn't shut my laptop when they came in. Yeah. Yeah. So it was,
Oh, man.
It hurt him more than them.
Right. I wonder if the original title of that book was My Awesome Thoughts.
My Awesome Thoughts.
Yeah.
Colon, I didn't want to kill them.
Right. I didn't want to kill them. So he's going to Japan?
Yeah, it looks like it. And that's, I guess it's better than being the transportation secretary, which is what they thought before. But, we got played because I think Neera Tanden, did we ever update people on this? I'm pretty sure she got nominated. She's part of something now.
But she didn't get the OMB, did she?
No, she didn't get the OMB. But I think she did get, she got a position, ready? Mm-hmm. Denied OMB chairship, she's assuming the role of senior advisor to the president. It's not as flashy, but it may give her more influence.
Senior advisor to the president
it's nominal.
It's like executive producer to Hangover 3, right? Like,
right.
There's a lot of them.
Really important. Problem.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, that could mean a lot of things.
Yeah.
It could just be a card, here, have a card and a little salary.
Yeah.
And if you really want to impress somebody, like, you can tell them you're a senior advisor to the president, but otherwise fuck off.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of how that one went.
Let's hope. A girl can dream. Yeah.
Right.
So there's that. And then there is something that you sent to me, which is that something from friend of show, David Sirota. And I'm only bringing it up because we brought up the Obama thing. So Sirota tweets out, seems to me that Barack Obama only gives interviews to pundits and news orgs that he knows are so obsequious that they implicitly guarantee they'll just accept this kind of horseshit answer about the financial crisis with no follow-up or pushback at all. This is at the New York Times. Do you think, given how intense political identities are now, that policy can persuade people to vote differently, or is partisanship now almost immune to the material consequences of governance?
I think that's Ezra Klein asking, by the way.
Okay.
But anyway, go ahead.
So that's we got Ezra Klein, asking. I think over time it does. I think it's not as immediate. And look, I think it's important to just remember that when we came into office, the economy was in a free fall. We had to scramble and do a bunch of stuff, some of which was inherited, some of which we initiated to stabilize the financial system. People hated it. It's hard to just underscore how much the bank bailouts just angered everyone, including me. And then you have this long, slow recovery, although the economy recovers technically quickly. It's another 5 years before we're really back to people feeling like, okay, the economy is moving and working for me. And the truth is that if Donald Trump doesn't get elected, let's say a Democrat, a Joe Biden or Hillary Clinton had immediately succeeded me, and the economy suddenly has 3% unemployment, I think we would have considered the sense that, actually these policies that Obama put in place worked.
David's completely right there, because first of all, he's being ridiculous. The reality of the bailout was that it was really good for the top 20% of the country and fantastic for the top 1%. But everybody else suffered net declines in net worth up until the last couple of years of Obama's presidency. But overall, it was a major sort of reshuffling of the pie, a reorganizing of the pie. And there's almost no way to argue that it didn't have a big influence on Trump winning, because it definitely inspired a lot of sort of economic distress at the lower end of the spectrum, right? Or in the middle, among people who aren't used to it, right? So they probably reacted a little bit irrationally there. But Obama's throughout the whole financial crisis, he got away with saying almost anything, and people never really called him on it. There was that famous interview in 60 Minutes where he said some of the worst behavior on Wall Street wasn't illegal.
Right.
And people interpreted that as none of the worst behavior on Wall Street was illegal, and therefore it's okay that we're not prosecuting any of these people. Right. And,
yeah.
It's just a very lawyered statement. Right. And nobody asked the follow-up question.
Right. Right. So. Yeah. Like how many of them were, if that's true, and could you have done something about the other ones?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Can you be specific?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, you know what, Matt, here's the thing. To quote Obama, my entire politics is premised on the fact that we are these tiny organisms on this little speck floating in the middle space. The differences we have on this planet are real, they're profound, and they cause enormous tragedy as well as joy. But we're just a bunch of humans with doubts and confusion. We do the best we can, and the best thing we can do is treat each other better because we're all we got. He told that to Ezra Klein in the same interview.
That's okay. So that's like the plot of Ant-Man, basically.
Yeah. It sounds and it sounds kind of like freshman year stoned Obama.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You can see the whole universe in your fingernail.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Animal House. Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's the kind of, if you can get away with giving an answer like that in response to something specific, like why didn't you send anybody to jail for mortgage fraud? That's a mark of a good politician right there.
It is. Yeah. Well, to be fair, as Ezra says in the opening, so he opens with that organism line. Very good opening. To be fair, I was the one who had introduced the cosmic scale, asking how proof of alien life would change his politics. But Obama, in a philosophical mood, used the question to trace his view of humanity. Sounds like someone's avoiding the alien life question.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. Take a stand.
Yeah. Take a stand.
Right. He probably knows the answer too, right?
He kind of looks like a handsome alien, actually.
You think?
He kind of looks ET related. Like if ET got his head caught in an elevator doors. Because, ET has a very square jaw, maybe heart-shaped, depending on one's definition of those.
I might have to dissent with you on this one. I'm not.
But again, handsome guy. I'm not denying he's handsome. And
right.
Also looked better gray, got better looking with age. So.
Like Bin Laden, another one of your favorites.
I mean, right? Bin Laden is no Soleimani, but he has nice person eyes. That's it. Handsome,
right.
He's. I mean, I just think we should admit that. Just like we should admit Leni Riefenstahl made good movies.
We should. We should be constantly admitting that.
We should praise her every day. I wake up inspired by her.
Automatic tweets every 30 seconds.
Yeah. We should start a Leni Riefenstahl Twitter account.
Reminder. Leni Riefenstahl made good movies.
Yeah. No, I mean from her perspective.
From her
things
perspective.
Are looking really good on the set of Triumph of the Will.
Right. It's well shot.
What was Olympias about the Olympics?
I didn't watch that one.
Well, I haven't sat down to watch either one to be if I'm being honest. Damn it, there goes my chance to run the Leni Riefenstahl account. Forget it. I
right,
just call by myself. I
well,
mean, I
you could brush up.
Yeah, I could binge watch. But in Olympus, she backwards, I know this from a film class. It's pretty stunning, and she has these divers, right? Footage of these divers like flips into the pool, and it's actually backwards footage. It's like in reverse.
Oh.
Nothing you can, it's not like backwards footage like you see them coming out of the water. It's like close-ups, and they're actually,
That's a good technique. Yeah. I like that. They did that in Top Secret, one of my favorite movies.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but it's a joke in that movie. Yeah. All right, so that's good. So we'll have to get into the Obama thing a little bit.
Yeah, more. Later. Yeah.
Yeah, at some point. For Republicans, like I don't. It's actually that's a good one. So I saw it first, believe it or not, looking at Star Trek veteran George Takei's Twitter account. It's about Pennsylvania government Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman's war over the flags in his office. He's putting gay pride flags outside of his office.
Yeah.
And so Republican legislators were upset, and they passed a bill to ban the display of these flags. And he responded, like, what are you going to do, send out the gay flag police after me? And they did, in fact, send state workers, I guess, from the General Services Department to take the flags away. And he puts them back up again.
Bigger rainbow flags, right?
Even bigger. And his whole offer is that you can get me to take them down forever if you pass like an equal protection law for lesbians and gays, whatever.
LGBTQIA,
IA. Oh, what's the IA for now?
Intersex. And I think asexual. Is that what the A is? Anyway.
We're going to have like a department of acronyms.
Yeah.
soon. This to me, again, it's like old school Republicans. Like, you're bothered enough by our gay pride flag that you got to send people out to go take it down.
Yeah.
You probably need a hobby.
Right. And it's probably patchwork quilting pride parades. Pride flags.
Pride flags.
What if that's what this was actually about? They're doing a patchwork quilt. Someone at home is actually making a patchwork quilt. They need all the pride flags that they can get.
I see. So it wasn't actually about an ideological statement. Right. They just needed the materials.
Yeah, exactly. The raw materials, yeah.
Okay, that would make it a little bit more understandable, right?
Yeah, now I'm for it.
Yes.
Donate your pride flags because Republicans are making a huge...
They're quilting.
They're quilting, yeah. That would be great if they were quilting, actually.
I think quilting is a nice relaxing hobby for a person to have. I mean, I don't personally quilt. Do you quilt?
No, I don't. I knit. Not very well.
Really? You knit?
I just do. Next show, I'll show you a scarf I've knit.
Really?
Yeah, I really will. And by the way, Matt, coming full circle with the pride and the space life.
Mm-hmm.
Today, if you go to Google, you know how Google, like sometimes they have a little.
Right.
Person, right. It's a guy named, I've never heard of him. Frank Kameny. Have you? Frank Kameny?
No.
He was an American gay rights activist. He had been referred to as one of the most significant figures in the American gay rights movement. He was dismissed in 1957. He was dismissed from his position as an astronomer in the U.S. Army's Map Service in Washington, D.C. because of his homosexuality, leading him to begin a Herculean struggle with the American establishment that would spearhead a new period of militancy in the homosexual rights movement of the early 1960s. This is, that quote is from Before Stonewall, Activists for Gay and Lesbian Rights in Historical Context.
Yeah, I do know that story. I didn't recognize the name, though.
He appealed his firing by the U.S. Civil Service Commission. Although unsuccessful, the proceeding was notable as the first known civil rights claim based on sexual orientation pursued in a U.S. court.
Right.
Did not know that. Right. There you go. Interesting.
Yeah. Well, good. Yeah. Yay for Google on that.
Yay for Google and yay for
quilters.
Frank. Yeah, and quilters. He's wearing a lei in this photo. It's very cute. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Leis are cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I got for Republican. Like, that's just classic, right?
Yeah, classic old school Republicans suck. Quilting is good.
It kind of reminds me of John Ashcroft throwing the
oh, yeah, covering up the naked woman.
The naked breast.
Naked statue.
Right,
What statue was that? It was the law. Was it Lady Justice?
I think it was...
Vampy Lady Justice.
Something like that. Yeah. She must have been hot, actually, because it bothered him.
Well, I mean, maybe it just bothered him in principle.
I don't think,
he's a principled man and a very good singer. Remember the song?
That's right. Yes. Yeah. Where the eagles soar. That's right.
Let the eagles soar.
Right. Yeah. That was quite a moment. Those were fun years.
They were kind of fun, unless you were living in the Middle East, in which case. But you know what? Not fun now either.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, who's complaining?
Yeah. They spent $8,000 on blue drapes that hide the two giant aluminum Art Deco statues. And that was the Justice Department did that. And it was in the Great Hall of the Department of Justice. So
that's a lot of money on drapes. Those.
Yeah, I know. I know. I hope they reuse them after. Oh, no, they're still there, I guess. Right.
I mean, I hope they didn't. Is the statue still covered up? I hope not.
I don't know. That's what I was going to say. If not.
Who has that statue? Where is it?
The female statue that represents the spirit of justice has its arms raised and a toga draped over its body, but a single breast is completely exposed. The other statue, a man with a cloth covering his midsection, is called the Majesty of Law. Wait, just his midsection?
Yeah.
They were installed in the 1930s when the building was finished, according to the Justice Department. The statues were hidden by curtains on November 20th when President Bush came to the Justice Department to name the building after the assassinated former Attorney General Robert Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
Comstock said apparently the Justice Department bought the drapes to avoid having to rent them every time the agency had a formal event. Okay, so I guess apparently Ashcroft didn't know it was being done.
Oh, I don't. We don't believe that, do we?
No way. That they were just covered up.
I like that though. The scantily clad justice statues, because it kind of implies that there's, you know, after doing justice, you gotta like finish the job. This isn't just barely not covering the breast. I mean, that breast is like prominent. And then there's
where's the dude though? Yeah,
dude, justice is also. Hang on a second. Here he is.
Oh, I see him. Okay, yeah. It's not covering his midsection. It's covering the crotch area.
Just barely.
I mean, just barely. Matt wants that covered. I guess they are covered up too. But I mean, midsection makes it seem like he was wearing like a crop top and his genitals were exposed, which would have been very
oh, funny. I see. I like it was like just midriff.
Yeah.
I see.
Which would have been very interesting. Yeah.
No, this is just like a strategically placed piece of clothing, right? Like,
yeah.
If that shot is from any other angle, you're seeing balls.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Sorry, can I tell you, there's a really funny, there's a great short story by a Russian writer named Sergei Dovlatov called The Suitcase. And it one of the stories in this, it's a series of vignettes, and it tells the story of how he worked as an apprentice to a sculptor at one point. And he lets the reader in on a secret, which is that, you know, the sculptor is basically busy making tons of Lenin statues and other communist figures, but they're all anatomically correct under the clothes. Like they all have genitals under the clothes.
Yeah, well, he's a realist.
Yeah, I guess so. So maybe that's a secret of sculpting.
Photo of Ashcroft kind of making, how would you describe his hands right here?
Doing the, I once caught a fish this big.
Yeah, right. But it's what's important is that it's not flat hands.
They're cupped.
They're rounded. They're cupped. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. If he was behind her,
it would be very inappropriate.
Yeah.
So
that's actually kind of a funny picture. That's a good picture.
Yeah.
Who took that shot?
Los Angeles Times.
You got to find that photographer.
Yeah.
All right. What do we have for? Isn't that weird?
So for Isn't That Weird, this is again one of these kind of borderline mixed genre. It could go under weird or terrible.
Right.
But just I think the headline almost like kind of speaks for itself. But we actually did a story on this before. People, viewers and listeners may remember that there was a tragic gender reveal party where people were killed in a plane crash. Mm-hmm. This is actually a thing, apparently. I'm reading at The Spectator. Why are people dying at gender reveal parties? These events have escalated to frightening, fascinating levels. And then they go through some of the examples. A New Hampshire man has turned himself into the police after setting off 80 pounds of explosives as part of a gender reveal party. NBC reports that the explosion, which was apparently caused by a legal explosive called tannerite, led to fears of an earthquake and cracked the foundations of nearby homes. And that was because of a gender reveal party. And of course, gender reveal parties reveal whether a couple's new child is a boy or a girl. Apparently, you know, when you can... You know when the first gender reveal video can be traced back to?
2009.
How'd you know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This article sucks, by the way. There are no links. How do you not have any links? I don't like this. All right. So,
Could be fake.
Oh, yeah. What
could
if it's
be fake news?
Is this fake news?
No.
We're going to have, reading again this terrible article with no links. Ben Sixsmith, is that even a real name? At first, the videos were safe, cute, and boring. Someone would cut into a cake to reveal colorful icing, or a box would release colorful balloons. But as parents struggled to stand out from the crowd, the sophistication scale of the reveals mounted. This month, two people were killed when a plane releasing pink smoke crashed in Mexico. In February, a New York man was killed when a device he was building for his child's gender reveal party exploded. Another explosion claimed the life of a grandmother when she was struck by shrapnel in Knoxville last year. I know. In 2020, a smoke-generating pyrotechnic device let off at a California gender reveal party, ignited a wildfire that burned homes and claimed the lives of a firefighter. In 2017, a gender reveal party in Arizona set off another blaze. A Louisiana this is like really messed up already. A Louisiana family placed a watermelon in an alligator's mouth that exploded with a splash of blue jelly. I knew you'd love it. A Texas family copied the stunt using a hippopotamus. That's not okay at all.
Why not?
It's murder.
What?
It's animal. I mean, you can't do that.
What? The hippopotamus eats a watermelon.
That part is fine.
It didn't kill the hippopotamus.
I'm sure it did.
Why?
Wait, hold on. Place a watermelon alligator's mouth that exploded.
I think it could have just been that they killed
the... I thought it meant that the hippo and the alligator went with it in the explosion.
Well, I mean, that would be messed up if they actually put explosives and blue jelly in the...
That's kind of what I thought it was.
All right, we got to find that actual event. Hang on a second.
He's sitting there crying.
Where do they get the alligator?
I know, it's just an alligator on the grass. And is this not a real alligator?
It's a real alligator.
Come on.
How do they make it not bite the guy?
Let's get this party going.
Oh my god. What the hell? Did he put it in him already?
No.
Oh no, there it is. Oh my god.
Ready? Come on, we're ready forever.
Oh my god, he almost snapped. I wish he had bit his hand off. Oh, okay. Thank god. All right, he just bit into the watermelon. Thank god. Okay. I thought it was going to explode both of them. All right. All right, now let's see the hippo one. So someone hired these animals?
It's a most unusual gender reveal.
Right here. There you go. Are you ready?
A father-to-be feeds a watermelon to a hungry, hungry hippo.
Yes!
All right,
you can
time,
see blue jello pouring out of
jello.
The watermelon. And-
wow.
Oh, man, that is funny.
Well, you know why I was thinking of such a violent thing before is because today I was looking for some stories and I found there was a test that I was reading at Science. Hardy water bears survive bullet impacts up to a point. Do you know what water bears are?
No.
Well, I got to put this in there. You just got to look at them. Hold on.
I don't know if I'm ready to have water bears in my life. Anyway, go ahead. Whoa.
Right?
What is that thing?
It's okay. They are real. That's real.
Oh, it's microscopic.
Yeah. Yeah. But still.
I thought it was like 4 feet long. That would have been awesome.
Wouldn't that be really cute? How would you describe what that looks like? Oh my God. They're really cute and weird looking.
It looks like a manatee with claws with like a rectum for a face.
No, a rectum. I think it looks like a nozzle from like a, look how it's perfectly serrated, the opening.
Oh, right.
You know
so like a shower head?
A shower head or like a vac, yeah, something. I mean, that looks like a blow up. Oh my God, I'm going in, like I'm zooming in on it. It looks like a blow up bed, but it's a little microscopic creature. That's exactly what it looks like. It looks like a nozzle. You know how blow up beds, air mattresses?
Right, yes. Yeah, the thing that you got to pull the little.
Yeah, that's exactly what it looks like. Oh my God, they're so cute. I want a life-size one. But they've been basically, there's been a lot of water bear abuse in the name of science.
Why? What are they?
Well, they blast them they were trying to see how destructible they were. So what they've been doing lately. Okay, so they're real big survivors, right? So they tried to send them to the moon. Okay.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. And then they also wanted to find out whether tardigrades is their other name. What they did was they fed about 20 tardigrades moss and mineral water. They put them into hibernation, a so-called TUN state in which their metabolism decreases to 0.1% of their normal activity by freezing them for 48 hours. And this is apparently an ethical study, they said. Then they place 2 to 4 at a time in a hollow nylon bullet and fire them at increasing speeds using a 2-stage light gas gun, which is a tool in physics experiments that can achieve muzzle velocities far higher than any conventional gun. When shooting the bullets into a sand target several meters away, the researchers found the creatures could survive impacts up to about 900 meters per second and momentary shock pressures up to a limit of 1.14 GPA. Above those speeds, they just mush.
So what's the scientific purpose of doing that again?
It places new limits on a theory known as panspermia, which suggests some forms of life could move between worlds as stowaways on meteorites kicked up after an asteroid strikes a planet or moon. Eventually, the meteorite could impact another planet along with its living cargo. But it shows that panspermia is hard but not impossible. I guess they're trying to figure out what would happen if a meteor struck.
And it had organisms of some kind on it?
I guess. Or no, we have the organisms are here. Maybe it's just an excuse to do what you want to do, which is like put caterpillars in a blender.
Yeah, exactly. I'm pretty sure it's just a bunch of scientists who are like, I bet we can get funding for this.
How big are they, though?
Doesn't matter. They're living things. It's funny.
I know. Right.
Yeah.
But it's a recent, basically, they fired the, a recent experiment put tardigrades into
the gas gun.
Fired
them at 900 meters per second into sand.
Yeah.
And then wrote a paper about it, I'm assuming.
Right.
And got funding. That's awesome.
Even hard to kill tardigrades can't always survive being shot out of a gun. A recent experiment put tardigrades' indestructibility to the test by firing the critters at speeds up to 1,000 meters per second. The inspiration to test water bears' ability to withstand high-speed impacts came from the tardigrade-toting Israeli spacecraft Bereshit, which crashed into the moon in 2019. I wondered, are there tardigrades alive, says astrobiologist Alejandra Traspas Muina of Queen Mary University of London. So that's when they froze them. She and a planetary scientist, Mark Burchell of University of Kent in England, loaded the dormant water bears into nylon bullets.
Of course.
Right. Yeah. It looks more like a cannon than a firearm. And they launched them at different speeds, ranging from 550 to 1,000 meters per second into bags of sand meant to mimic the lunar surface. And it proved lethal when it was at 825 meters per second.
But then there's they quote another guy from the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa who wonders if there aren't other kinds of water bears who might prove even more splatterproof.
Wow.
So this kind of research could be going on all over the world.
All over. We would never see it. In fact, I wonder if people in meetings are doing it. Like without being able to detect it. They're just going like this, like... I don't know how to explain this motion for listeners, but they're like
putting thumb
their
wrestling
thumb,
a little
yeah,
bit.
Thumb yeah, thumb wrestling. Yeah. I like this sentence. Water bears that were frozen and thawed without being pelted into sand bounce back within 9 hours.
You think they're going to upgrade to larger animals? You think they'll be using Bichon friezes and stuff like that?
Don't say that. They're so cute. Maybe hippos and alligators. Maybe that's what that test. Well, I'm just telling you, that's why I think that was in my head when they did that. I think that's why.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. I don't really understand, though, what the point of this was.
What the point of shooting?
Like what the test was.
I think they're trying to measure the possibility of life traveling between planets, theoretically. But it's what it really tests is the ability of scientists to get funding for shit.
Yeah.
Which is impressive. I mean, I'm all for that. But that is weird.
That is weird, right? But what I really like about this is that, again, this paper, which is like the scientific paper, they say they were handled according to the ethical rules for invertebrates with the consent of the department ethics officer.
So there's like a guideline on shooting invertebrates with a nylon gun?
I guess so, yeah.
So this must be going on all over the country or everywhere.
Right.
How come we don't have invertebrate shooting parties
instead of gender
reveal parties?
I guess because we'd have to all have microscopes.
Right. They have to do it with bigger animals.
But I do. I want a big blow up one of those. I want like a full.
You want a cute one? And those claws look a little kind of intense to me.
Yeah, they do. Well, they more look like little.
Also,
needles.
The face, like, what does it do with that? Is it nuzzle or does it take little circle sized bites out of you?
Yeah, maybe. Oh, yeah. Like Yemeni children.
Yeah. And these are small too. So same problem.
Right. Yeah. And there are no conflicts of interest.
Isn't that terrible? We had a couple options. You were kind of pushing this idea that the state of Arizona is using.
I wasn't. I don't know if pushing that idea as much as saying that it happened. You make it seem like it's a conspiracy theory on my end.
It was a conspiracy theory. Yeah. You were trying to get me to go with Arizona using cyanide to execute people. Like, you know, like that's so horrible.
Right.
Like,
just because the Nazis did it.
Right. Yeah, the only reason I didn't go for that is because the other methods of executing people are also horrible. So
to be fair, yeah.
Yeah, like the whole use of paralytics and stuff. And people,
which is why a guy just sued to have the Supreme Court rule on he wanted a firing squad because he has some neurological condition and he's afraid it'll be painful. Talk about ethics.
Well, the most benign is the guillotine, which they did actually have briefly in a couple of states, if I remember correctly.
I feel like benign and guillotine never belong in the same.
Well, I mean, not benign. What's the word I'm looking for? Like humane, I guess. right? Because it's at least shorter. Let's not have this discussion. Yeah. This is why I didn't want to do this one. All
right, so it's too real life terrible, right? We like doing not.
No, so this is a story from the AFP about a development in South Korea. They have the South Koreans are building basically like the climate change version of a fallout shelter. So they built this sort of gigantic underground tunnel, which is designed to withstand a nuclear blast. And its mission is to preserve 5,000 different kinds of seeds.
The facility was built to store wild plant species and to protect them against climate change so that our future generations will be able to use them to prevent extinction.
나중에 미래 세대를 위해서 미래 세대가 그 식물이 멸종되는 것들을 방지하고.
And I love the fact that he's wearing a mask because we're already having one disaster.
Right.
And then there's like this sort of.
It's one of only two such facilities in the world, the other in the Arctic. Huh.
And they have these little, like, they're almost like meals ready to eat.
Yeah. The deposits are designed to be permanent, only used as a last resort against extinction. Look, I wasn't going to have any, but I'm starving. And the sea vault stores seeds to prevent them from becoming extinct. So the best scenario would be that the seeds never have to be taken out. Right.
Right. You don't want to be using them for any reason.
Yeah, except recreational and survival. Right. Plant extinction is progressing at an alarming rate, researchers say.
So it's like seed Noah's Ark.
Driven by an increasing human population, pollution, deforestation. Right. Seed Noah's Ark. Yeah. One might ask, why is that wildflower on the curbside important? The crops that we eat today may have come from that nameless flower on the curbside. Our job is to identify those one by one and let people know how important they are.
I mean, they put a lot of effort into this.
Yeah, where are people getting the funding for this? I mean, okay, to be fair, this probably is
a little bit more
justifiable than
shooting invertebrates into sand.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is this terrible? No, it's actually.
I mean, I was going to say this doesn't thing, count as isn't that terrible?
But
I don't think
it's as a symbol of what's going on in the minds of human beings in our era, like that we're preparing for having to replant basically all these different species of vegetables and so on. It's just emblematic of how depressed, you know, humanity is at this moment, right? Maybe justifiably, but it's a little bit like those incredibly elaborate bomb shelters that people built in the 60s when everyone was convinced that nuclear war was coming.
Right.
Didn't end up needing those, but the fact that we're already engaged in these preparations tells us that we're in a pretty dark frame of mind, seems to me. And I don't want to live in that tunnel, by the way.
Yeah, it doesn't.
I mean, maybe
nice.
they're not saying that we would live there, but
right.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to build like a post-apocalyptic tunnel,
go to Korea. That's where it's at.
What I was going to say is, I think you should furnish it a little bit better.
Oh yeah, that was not furnished. That was bare, very, very Spartan. I don't like that. That is something that I think should get invested in.
Right.
That could be a good reality TV show, like Queer Eye for Straight Guy. It could be like, you know, queer interior decor.
For the apocalypse?
Yeah, you know what we do?
Some throw
pillows.
We get
the Republicans to donate the collected pride flags that they're quilting.
Right.
Get some rainbow, you know, get some bright.
Put it up over all that concrete.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Because it kind of would soften up room a little bit.
Yeah. And you put in some water bears just to know that they're there. You won't be able to see them.
Yeah. Well, it feels like life.
Yeah, you know? It feels like a party when water bears are there.
You can almost have like a permanent sort of video installation of one side of water bears swimming around.
Yeah.
Because that would make you feel like, you know, that the world above you isn't dead.
Right. Because it literally would be... I mean, the biggest, they're so full of life, these people are so full of life that they can survive blasts. So they actually would probably just be hanging out there anyway.
Right. Okay. You mean the water bears?
The water bears, yeah.
Yeah. They would naturally find their way there.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just found that story depressing for some reason.
Yeah. I mean, the situation, it's the premise of it is depressing.
you know, that they've already had to collect 5,000 different kinds of seeds and put them in all those different boxes and crates, and that they have one in the Arctic.
Yeah, what's going on there? Does the Arctic actually exist?
It does.
I have my doubts.
I know somebody who used to do tours in the Arctic, in Antarctica. So he's actually been there. So he could be lying to me, I guess.
He is.
Could
motive,
be fake news. Yeah.
Yeah.
So okay, isn't that terrible? And really, it's just like
I think of that as isn't that resourceful? But yeah, sure, climate change is real. Yeah, finally, Matt the skeptic.
Was I a skeptic?
No, I'm just kidding, because yeah. That's the news. Yeah,
right. I see. Yeah, isn't that resourceful? I guess so. Right. How come we're not doing that? Why are the South Koreans doing that?
Yeah.
If we're shooting little micro animals into sand, although I guess that's not us doing that. It's the British doing that.
Right.
What are we doing? What's the dumbest scientific experiment that's going on in America right now? But if there's anybody out there among our listeners who knows the answer to that question,
please get in touch. Yeah. Use the hashtag useful idiots
pod.
Yeah.
So, okay. So that was all the food groups.
Yeah. All the food groups. Yeah. All the food groups. Yeah.
All right. Well, we have a great show coming up for you. We're going to talk to Friends of Show.
Yes. Friends of Show.
And Sagar and Jetty. Who made a move that we're kind of familiar with. So we were going to talk to them about that and some other issues of importance to people of our ilk politically, right? Or I guess we're not of the same ilk politically. So
they have a parallel. They copied
they're
us.
They're in
they
a pair,
started,
in a par-
they started
parallel.
Before us, but they copied us somehow.
Also, their archetypes are a little different than ours, but we're going to talk to them and that's going to be fun.
And you can find their big announcement from them, which we'll save.
Let's go to that conversation.
Let's do it. Welcome back to the show, Crystal Ball and Sagar and Jetty, formerly of Rising of the Hill. But now they've reached that breaking point and they're started their own thing.
You had to do it.
Yeah. So welcome. And we're really excited to get the scoop about what happened. I wanted to start out by asking how inspired you guys were by R.
Exactly what I was going to lead with is like, you guys blazed the trail. We saw useful idiots going rogue, going independent, and we're like, they've shown us the way. So honestly, I was hoping we could use the next however long the interview is going to last for you guys just to give us some tips, some pointers, some hand-holding, what have we done? Have we made a horrible mistake?
No, actually, like, maybe we could start there. The sad thing is you guys have started, weren't you launched this week, right? And we actually need tips yesterday. From you. So
they've already got a set.
The same thing. I know. Yeah,
that's true.
It's nice set too. I have to tell you, I'm really proud of it because we built it, like we designed it, which was very nerve wracking. Cause as you guys know, like the way things look in person is very different from how they look on camera. So I was pretty nervous that it was going to look like shit, but it does not look like shit. It actually looks fantastic.
Yeah.
The real low point is when I had to design the desk and I sent it to the desk manufacturer and he was like, this is literally the worst drawing I've ever seen. He's like, this is the worst. It looked like a 3-year-old draw.
Can you show us the drawing?
I don't know. I have a picture somewhere on my phone. It's literally like sticks with a curve. And I was like drawing measurements and it was like very unclear whether it was inches or feet. And
Spinal Tap.
It was
Stonehenge.
It was so bad. Like, it was terrible. But it came up great. It's a great looking desk. So I'll put it up against Fox and MSNBC any day.
Great reference, Matt. Yeah. You know, we're stupid talent. So we don't know how to do these things, like draw pictures of desks and whatever.
Oh,
but it looks really great.
I am considering becoming one of those boomers who's like, do you have any idea how hard it is to start a business in this country?
Because
this shit is hard.
But they were gonna
this
say to
shit
build
is
a
hard.
Desk. Yeah.
No, well, I mean building a desk, all those fucking lawyers, LLC, whatever. Okay, like it's unbelievably annoying, and so that's another thing. I've become one of those libertarian boomers who's a small business owner.
You should actually ask Lawrence O'Donnell about the desk thing. You know how he's always raising money for his daughter's like charity, which builds desks in some.
Oh, that's really? A great charity. That's a really great charity, though.
Yeah.
I don't want to make fun of that.
Oh. No, I'm not making fun of it.
He raises a lot of money for students to have desks and materials in poor communities in Africa. So,
Okay. All right.
What do they need desks for? I'm sorry.
Good question.
I'm kidding.
Well, I think it's hard to work if you don't have a desk. I mean, that's pretty challenging. All right, Matt.
I'm just being a jerk.
Tell me about your Malawi charity.
Yeah.
How it's better than Lawrence O'Donnell's.
Right. I don't have a Malawi charity.
What's the useful idiots charity? What do you guys donate to?
To you guys.
All right. Oh, there you go.
Well, there you go.
That's acceptable. You can write that off.
We fully support that. Yeah. No, I mean, in all seriousness, like, you can guess some of the reasons why we left. The bottom line is, if you are into independent media and you don't pull your punches where, you know, certain corporations or powerful entities are concerned, at a certain point, it becomes a little unsustainable to be in corporate media, critiquing corporate media.
Yeah.
And there were specific things. I mean, just to give you a little example recently of something that made the dynamic unsustainable in terms of our maintaining our core principles. So The Hill takes money out from all kinds of different advertisers and, you know, everybody from like Coke Industries to American Petroleum Institute, which was always really uncomfortable. You know, I saw some pushback on Twitter of like, oh, why aren't you guys covering Stephen Donziger's trial, which we did cover. We did a couple of segments with him. We did a segment with Marianne Williamson and Susan Sarandon. But, you know, I don't even like the fact that people would question that money coming into a corporate media outlet is going to impact our coverage. So that was, you know, those sorts of scenarios played out a number of times during our time there. And I don't want to attract, like, we were incredibly fortunate to get to build what we built there. We were allowed to say so much more and be way out there for much further than, you know, when I was at MSNBC, for example, but got to a place where we did see examples like yours and others of successfully making the jump, and hoped and it seems like it's worked out that our audience would believe in what we're doing and have our back and also want to support a non-corporate media entity. And so decided to take the leap.
I'll give you guys an example. Yeah. I mean, and look, this again, it's not The Hill's fault. Like, The Hill, their job is to be a beltway media outlet. But like, I love this. I did a segment where this is all I said. I said, Maxine Waters will be the chairwoman of the Financial Services Committee till the day she dies. That's all I said. It was in the context of the seniority system in the House. This is an objective fact, right? Like, okay, we're all settled there. Well, her fucking staff calls the boss of The Hill and said that I issued a death threat against Maxine Waters. I shit you not. No, for real. Like, they said that I was threatening her life. And they don't call me. They don't call my boss. They call your boss's boss, right? And they start threatening all kinds of shit. And here's the thing. Maxine Waters, she's the chairman of the Financial Services Committee. And Hill reporters need to be able to talk to her. So they know exactly who to threaten and like work the strings and like, oh, maybe we're not going to appear. And I'm like, oh, I mean, my natural inclination is to call the guy back and say, go fuck yourself, you know? And by the way, I'm recording this and I'm just going to release it. But I can't do that.
You can though. So if you recorded it.
And that's why I'm telling the story. By the way, not off the record anymore, bitch.
Yeah.
And so the other one is
bitch
that
is not to obviously
that was not about Maxine Waters. Yeah, it was to her chicken shit chief of staff who thought that he could threaten. Here's the other one.
I hope we have more of these. This is good. Yeah. This is great.
Oh yeah, I'm happy. I've got a year, 2 years of grievances. The other one was TikTok. So for example, I for a while was doing segments and reporting on Republican specifically lobbyists who were former Paul Ryan staffers and others who were going to go work for TikTok. All public knowledge. Their bios were all on LinkedIn, everything. It was all public. I tweeted it out and I was like, oh, another Paul Ryan staffer going to go work for a de facto Chinese government company. Really interesting. That was it. I did a monologue on it. TikTok calls up The Hill and is like, he's issuing death threats and unleashing harassment, you know, blah, blah, blah. And again, I'm like, fuck you. Like, I don't care. I didn't do anything wrong. It's called reporting. Don't work for a Chinese company if you don't want scrutiny. Sorry. And dude, they know how to pull the string. And look, I was afraid because at the time, The Hill was taking advertisements from Huawei, a Chinese telecom company. And I was like, shit, man, what if TikTok starts advertising? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So all of these are just examples of, look, if it's even in the back of my mind that I can't do reporting on TikTok or say whatever I want about Maxine Waters or any other powerful politician, yeah, then yeah, I'd be lying if I didn't say that I didn't have to at least think about it whenever I was issuing my commentary.
Yeah. I mean, you're arrogant if you don't think that those sorts of pressures and incentives right. are going to affect you. Right. Of course they are.
Yeah,
you need to exactly. make a TikTok about what happened.
Well, I don't use TikTok. I refuse to download it.
So. Well, I know, but that would be ironic. I'm going to make a TikTok of this about you. Yeah, this will be a good TikTok video. Well,
you know what's interesting about that, though, is that it's a little bit revealing about why the media landscape is split, because ultimately the threat is that they're going to cut off access, right?
Yes.
So if you don't care about the access, that's when you get the negative reporting. That's why like MSNBC doesn't worry about saying nasty things about Republican politicians, because
they're never going to get it. Exactly.
They're never going to get it. They don't
work at MSNBC.
Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah. Right. Yeah,
Wallace
exactly.
Or our correspondents, like, yeah.
Right.
Like Steve Schmidt. But yes, currently elected. Right. Right. Of course. Yeah.
But if you have any pretensions to ever actually wanting to do any real reporting, like the idea that they can just close their doors to you is something you have to think about. So that, I mean, that's just very frustrating, right? Like the idea that you have to worry about pulling your punches because everybody else at the organization might now have to, you know,
right, be penalized right. by us doing critical coverage, you know, across the board. So, and I didn't want to get into like some of the pettier grievances, but I also do think it was just really telling that on our way out the door, after having a great run there, building a great show that people seemed to really appreciate, that had tremendous growth in a very short period of time, like, you know, we did our goodbye video to our audience that we built there, and they changed the head. They didn't want to premiere it. They took it down. They turned off the comments. They put it back up, and now it's disappeared from the channel. Like,
give it to us. We'll play it from the Useful Idiots channel.
I don't know. It's their IP. It's theirs. Sort of. Whatever.
It just left it. It left a little bit of a. It left a sour taste after investing a lot of heart and soul into building a show there, and then that's the way you're treated out the door. When you know, we told people we did everything they asked us to do. We told people to stick around and watch what they're up to, and then it's still this just like petty sort of trying to knife us on the way out. Yeah.
So well, don't stick around. Unsubscribe, everyone, from the Hill.
No, come on.
Wow, you're a better man than I.
It shows you a little bit about how
there's room for everyone to succeed. That's really the look,
we've been trying to make that case for a long time.
Right.
Anyway, go ahead.
Well, I think you should, if you have the video, we should do it. We should watch it. Do commentary.
We don't have the video. It's
no
their
one,
IP.
No one, it's yeah, but no IP. One screen grabbed it. No one screen grabbed it.
It's all right. It's all good. It's all good.
So well, since they did that, you owe us one petty grievance then. Just like
that's it. Yeah. That's pretty bad, don't you think?
That's a pretty
good. But we know that that's not a scoop. We want a scoop. Tell us someone you want to call out who you couldn't. tell us something you want to say.
I'll tell you what the chief beef is. The top beef was that, and you guys will understand this because you're on the internet, and everybody who's also watching us will understand this. Crystal and I were not allowed to even mention or promote our own podcasts on The Hill. So we build this audience on this platform, and there's some cockamamie idea that our podcasts are going to somehow subtract from what's happening. And Katie, you used to come on our show all the time. Is it not an additive thing we add to you, you add to us, we rise together? It's called the internet. It's actually not a discrete resource, turns out. Welcome to the year 1999.
Yeah.
And trying to explain this was maddening. And it was the dumbest thing. Yeah. And it was such a petty way in order to just try and control our public image, our brand, how we appeared in public. And I'm looking at Matt and you out here saying whatever the hell you want. And I'm like, why do I have to put up with this shit? You know, it was just endless little things like that.
To piggyback on that, just to draw on for the audience how silly of a way to think about things that is. So, you know, my co-host on my podcast, Crystal Kyle and Friends, is Kyle Kalinske, who was consistently, when we would have him on Rising, one of our top performing guests. He was one of the very few people that, you know, always would deliver numbers. We had him on early on in the channel. He's one of the people really helped bring attention to the fact that we even existed. So a lot, you know, a good part of his audience had subscribed and helped to build us up. Once I started doing the podcast with Kyle, he was banned from appearing on Rising. It's like,
yeah,
I mean, okay, but yeah. How, like, you're just hurting yourself right now. Right. I mean, it's,
you're literally taking money out of your pocket.
So, right. So it was, it was incredibly frustrating and just like mind-numbingly stupid types of just like counterproductive. There's just this mindset of media is zero sum in the same way that cable news is really sort of zero. You can either watch CNN or you're watching MSNBC. You're not watching both at the same time. There was all this kind of like legacy thinking in place about the way that things should be or the way that things work that just is, you know, not the reality in the spaces that we're operating in.
But it's not really zero sum. I mean, like, almost every other business understands the principle of getting
pollination,
of this sort of mutual rising. McDonald's and Burger King are constantly putting their franchises next to each other because both franchises actually end up selling more when that's true.
Right.
That's a great point. Why is that? About the chicken sandwich wars, very additive for everyone involved, I'm sure.
Exactly.
Why is that? Why would they put themselves next to each other?
I don't know. It's like a
critical mass, and then, you know, one feeds the other, and
that chicken sandwich.
It's a classic business concept.
Not satisfying.
It's why businesses often are next to each other, even if they're competitors. It's just like a thing. But the media is it's just a very parochial business where editors and news directors have like this sort of ownership idea about the properties that they manage that is just outdated and silly and petty. That's ridiculous. But now you don't have to go through with that. And already it sounds like you've gotten such a great response from your subscribers that it's already a success, right?
Yeah. I mean, we're blown away.
People hate corporate media even more than we could have imagined. And Matt, I want to say too, as the set is currently constituted, one little reveal I will say is your book is very prominently placed.
Nice.
That's right. We've got Hate Inc. and we've got manufacturing consent. Right.
Wow.
On
wow.
Yeah. Now I'm going to have to write a book so you can put it on your.
Yeah, we'll put it right there. Let us know.
Get on it,
motivating.
Katie.
Yeah. Well, Crystal, I mean, you can cut this if this is confidential, but I believe that you weren't allowed to have me on your, on Kyle. Crystal, Kyle, and Friends, right? Because of my...
So there's... Yes.
Oh, the two-week rule. Yeah, explain this genius.
Another silly thing. Yeah. So in the same contractual provision that said, like, that Kyle was banned since I was doing this podcast with him, there was a two-week, like, you couldn't have someone on the podcast within 2 weeks of them being on Rising. And since we have you on Rising every single week, that effectively meant, that you couldn't be on the podcast.
Right. So did you include that?
We'd have to space out. Like, we had Matt on the podcast, but then we had to like space out. And there was all kinds of weird back and forth about spacing you out from Rising because of the, but it's silly. Again, very silly.
It's so mind-numbingly stupid.
Right. And I mean, I just want to suggest that that's probably was the biggest factor. Because the new shows. Yeah.
Katie Halper everywhere and every time that I need your insights, you will be there for me.
Yeah.
And that was the straw.
I thought so. Yeah.
You're actually going to be levitating over the center of the set. That's like the part of the design permanently.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I didn't want to reveal everything, but since Matt brought it up.
Yeah. Are you afraid though that Kyle, because I was listening to the realignment, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's your pod. And then Sagar, and then Crystal, of course, you have Crystal, Kyle, and Friends. And I heard Kyle was saying how you guys at The Hill weren't subjected to the kind of, what was it, YouTube, the ad-ocalypse? What's it called? The
Adpocalypse. Well, that was before we started the show, but
Yeah. Kyle was talking about having a corporation behind you, obviously, that means that you're favored more in terms of algorithms. So I was wondering though, what if this is all, if Kyle encouraged you to go rogue, maybe that's because he didn't want to compete with your Hill numbers. I don't know if he did encourage it. I'm just
Once
putting
again,
it out there.
We're all rising
he
together.
Did encourage
Katie.
It, Katie.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's what I'm
saying. To think about.
Yeah,
it's possible. It's a good conspiracy.
Yeah. We actually are a little worried, and in terms of the business model, like we were a little worried about how the YouTube algorithm would treat us.
Yeah.
Because I think we, you know, being with The Hill, verified and authoritative resource or whatever they have them deemed, I do think, you know, we benefited a lot from that. And I've seen the way that independent news and politics has just been like, you know, really hit hard during the, in recent months, yeah. With lack of subscriber growth and lack of view, like view suppression, all that stuff. So we were kind of worried about being at the whims of the YouTube algorithm, which is why we're leaning more into the
yeah.
subscriber.
Like, yeah, that's why we didn't build our business.
We just don't have to worry about
that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, that's why we didn't build our business off of YouTube views. I was told a story. I was like, you know, if this was 2014, we would have been like, Facebook Watch, baby, let's go. You know, Facebook Watch views and YouTube and like, let's party. Like, you know, like, let's, it's all the ad, all ads all the time. Yeah. But like, no, I mean, we're not stupid. And the real thing is I've been through enough digital media companies to know that you never know what's going to happen with these ads. Never. They can turn the spigot off anytime they want. I mean, during COVID, the CPMs plummeted by like 90%. Whenever I worked at the Daily Caller, it was, you pray to the Facebook gods. You have no idea how they're going to treat you that day. You have to build your business in such a way that you can't rely on anybody but your audience. And luckily, now we have the tools to do that. So thank God for that. I mean, we are not at the whims of any of that in terms of our primary source of revenue.
Isn't that so interesting though, that the, like for almost a decade or even longer, news companies were basically building their entire editorial strategy whatever they thought the algorithm was.
Change it overnight.
And they would change it and then they would change their strategies. And then, and you know, the only way around it is this subscriber model.
There are a bunch of companies that were just destroyed when Facebook change their model. Mike comes to mind. You know, they grew like crazy and took in all this venture money and hiring all these, got this beautiful space, and they were like the millennial, you know, online news destination. And then the second that Facebook changed their whole algorithm, it was over. And there were a number of companies that are like that. So yeah, I mean, you can't build a sustainable property or business or whatever off of the whims of, you know, a couple of billionaires. It's not,
right.
You just can't.
Not
do
smart
it.
Idea.
Well, this is great. So technically, it starts on the 7th, right?
June 7th. Yeah. We launch.
Yeah. All
go
right.
Go to crystalandsagar.com to come members and all that good stuff. And we couldn't be
breaking
more
excited. Points on YouTube. Please check it out.
Yeah,
excellent. Yeah. Spend all of your disposable income on
don't do that.
I've gotten emails from someone who's like, I'm unemployed, but I want to get, I'm like, keep it. It's all good. Watch it on
only
YouTube.
If
it's okay.
Comfortable for you.
Yeah,
if you can.
I'm like, if you can afford it, then fine.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah. Any people you do want to call out again, here's your you're once again offering you the chance.
We're gonna
take Michelle Obama's advice and take the high road.
That's right. And they go low, you go high.
They go high.
Right.
All right. Thank you guys. All you guys are an inspiration to us.
We love you guys.
Really
thank you.
Take care now.
Bye.
All right. Well, that was cool. Crystal and Sagar were sort of an inspiration to us, I think, from the beginning, right? And they remain really the only experiment in mainstream media at that kind of thing.
Yes. Right. Yeah. They were talking about when I heard their joint crossover podcast with The Realignment and Crystal Kyle and Friends, they were talking about how much like people would watch them because of the aesthetics of the set and what they were wearing and everything. And so it gives them, cause they do have that in a way that like, they're the only show remotely like that, that looks like a real like a cable news show.
But what's so amazing, it's amazing, right? Because they did great numbers. They did numbers that were comparable to, I mean, I think, as I said, even better than CNN shows. And I think there were lots and lots of companies that could have, I mean, they wouldn't have had those personalities and that would have been a setback. But if they had just even had tried the concept of let's not be culture war, you know, assassins all day long, they would have instantly done great numbers, and not one of them tried. Not the way they had no imitators, which was crazy.
Right. Yeah. You
know? I don't know. I think that was amazing. But anyway, Great.
I mean,
for
we always started like just in terms of the inspiration thing, like, yeah, the dynamic, but we're in a different political spot where we're like not identical, but we're not diametrically opposed.
No, right. Yeah, exactly. The concept of the show, of their show, was it was not designed to make people freak out and be angry. Yeah. It was designed to like look at things from a point of view right. That was excluded. And, you know, yeah. we did a little bit of that too.
Or be angry at the media elites and the political elites.
Right. Anyway, yeah. Good for them, right?
Good for them, yeah. Well, they're going to get this useful idiots bump. I mean, all the success they've already got it. Yeah. Is going to be, you know where to find the source for that.
That's right. It's always really, no matter what the issue is, even if it's not about us, it's about us.
Basically, yeah. Right. At least me. Sometimes yeah. about us.
Right. Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah. Occasionally, it's a little bit about me, but yes, it's always about you, at least.
Yeah.
So anyway, great to talk to them.
Yes,
and thanks for listening.
Thanks and so much or for watching. Listening. And or watching. And to hear the rest of that great interview with Crystal Ball and Sagar and Jetty, go to
usefulidiots.substack.com. And we'll see you next week.
Substack.com. Subscribe on YouTube. Rate and review the pod.
We will see you again.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.